this is what I do. Like, my safe spot mentally is writing music. So
this is what you do.
There's piles of it. There's like 9 more Soft Kill records done, you know, which is intimidating and a terrifying prospect. Dead Kids R.I.P. City is coming out probably fall of this year. The label, the exact date and everything will be announced soon. The more and more that this band progresses, I realize that what really influenced Soft Kill initially was like new wave. It wasn't this dark post-punk, whatever people want to call it, just as much The Cars and Devo and Early Wire and Magazine as it was, you know, The Cure or Bauhaus or any of that stuff that people try to say is the root.
At the top of the show, you heard Tobias Grave. He's the founder of Soft Kill. The band's set to perform at the Cruel World Festival later this year with Bauhaus, Morrissey, Blondie, Devo, Drap Majesty, and many others. You're listening to The Portland Podcast. We're a BBC-flavored independent talk show. We're based in Portland, Oregon, hosted and produced by me, Gregory Druka Day. Music from today's show contains selections from the band's Bandcamp page. All of the tracks are demo recordings available at softkill.bandcamp.com. More now from Tobias on the early days of Soft Kill.
You know, when Open Door came out in 2011, right as I was really slipping back into drug abuse, It's been a constant in my life since I was about 20 years old. I'm 37 now. And Open Door came out, I want to say I was like 27, 28 years old, maybe around that time. Maybe a little later, I have no idea. It's all a blur. But there was this big break. It was kind of like I would get back on my feet and we would play a show and it would go great. And I'd say, well, this is clearly not working out. I'm terrified and didn't really want to face getting hopes up, having expectations. I think my lifestyle was more like, you know, it was kind of bag to bag, so to speak, as an addict. I don't think I had a lot of room for, you know, the emotions that go hand in hand with living like a normal functioning life. The whole story of the label that released it in that kind of era is
like Nathan's Fast Weapons label.
Yeah, that's its own kind of crazy story.
Yes, it was a crazy period in Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, 2010, 2011, that era was cool. I mean,
very.
It was dark and messed up, and I'll watch my language, but it was a wild time. What was kind of cool was me going away. Like, I didn't really start doing the band again until late 2015.
With the Heresy EP.
Right.
And a lot before that, like demos, maybe some bit of Blesher Grave, maybe?
There was a period where I felt like kind of comfortable revisiting that.
And that's the beginning, you know, how you started with Blesher Grave, and then it became Soft Kill, and then you...
Right, yeah. I mean, all of that's intertwined. I feel like what's interesting is that Blesher Grave becomes its own thing after an Open Door. And that's with the Flashing EP. That's like me and my best friend of years, Owen Thompson, who just sitting down and writing songs together, where Blesher Grave had been just me by myself and Soft Kill for the most part was the same thing. It was just, it kind of got like this separation. And at that point, it was weird, like Soft Kill would kind of bubble up, but it wasn't until late 2015 that I had kind of put together a group of people that I was interested in playing with. We did Heresy. I look at Heresy as the second album, even though it's Spotify has it listed as an EP. I guess it doesn't meet the length requirements. but I look at that as our second record, and then...
Hit the Floor.
Right, that's
that
one
was
of my...
on that record.
We still play that one all the time. That's like a... It's been a staple. We've opened, I'd probably say, like 80% of our sets over the course of the past few years of touring with it. It's always there. You know, there's a lot of influences that have been part of Soft Kill's makeup, but clearly, like, early Cure was a big one initially. And Hit the Floor kind of captures, like, that to me is, like, our best take on a Faith or Pornography. We don't need to keep doing it anymore, you know? So, you know, it just was album after album. And I did so many demos, and I've always felt very comfortable with that lo-fi approach, yeah. The home recording thing, that the demos, in some cases, I like better. It always felt like releasing those too was like, you know, an imperative part of the story, even if some people can't stand hearing, you know, my kid in the background, like asking for a bottle during a vocal take.
So recently you played at Audio Tree Live in Chicago. This was last year, June 4th. Second song on your set, Wanting War. I looked through your catalog. I don't remember this song.
This is going to be on the next record.
Wow, what a track.
So Dead Kids R.I.P. City is coming out probably fall of this year. The label, the exact date and everything will be announced soon. Yeah, Wanting War, it just felt like, you know, the more and more that this band progresses, I realized that what really influenced Soft Kill initially was like new wave. It wasn't this dark post-punk, whatever people want to call it. Not that Wanting War is like an upbeat song, but it was just as much The Cars and Devo and Early Wire and Magazine as it was, you know, The Cure or Bauhaus or any of that stuff that people try to say is the root of all of our bands.
What makes you so interesting, Tobias? I mean, you have all these different influences. Bands that just listen to this music and people that just, you know, listen to dark wave, cold wave, it becomes, you know, becomes a bit stale. I think you need a bit of a bit more going on in your life.
You know, it's weird. I think with Pleasure Grave, that's where it kind of, I got pigeonholed as the goth kid. I played into that because it was funny to some degree, but I grew up, you know, a punk kid, like, listening to Crass and sewing patches onto my pants and being a, you know, a little idiot. But I also was like, a lot of the stuff that really laid the foundation that I started to hear when I started writing music in this direction, it was like Winners Never Quit by Pedro the Lion. And
oh, you just saw Pedro, right?
Right, which I finally, 20 years later, finally...
He's doing these house shows.
Great. Yeah. They're great. But like that record was imperative. Cursive's Domestica was like a huge one. I always felt like there was like parallels between that stuff, the way that the guitars and the basses, like the interplay, that was... It's like, you know, it's cohesive in the same way that a lot of these bands that we talk about are. I don't listen to a lot of post-punk, dark wave.
No, you don't.
This is what I do. Like, my safe spot mentally is writing music. So
This is what you do.
There's piles of it. There's, like, 9 more Soft Kill records done, you know, which is intimidating and a terrifying prospect because it means that this is what I'm going to be doing for a long time.
I was looking through your material, what you've written recently, and all the demos and all the tracks that have not been released in the works. I felt like Salieri looking at Mozart's notes. It's just incredible. You're so prolific, so talented. Rewind, go back to the last album, Savior. Now, you worked with Ben Greenberg again, producing this record.
Correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Ben Greenberg played in a band with Conrad when I met Conrad years and years ago.
Uniform, or is that
it was called
band?
It was called The Fugue. And then, you know, Ben's been in a million bands. Ben's always been the person that was just, like, too good at every instrument. I learned just enough. He learned the rest. So... when it kind of came in, I forgot how it got suggested to us that Ben do the record. He did Choke, and it was like...
Great job.
He just did the mix. And when we got that back, I remember crying. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know we could do a record that sounded like this. So with Savior, we did the whole thing with him. And that record is such like a whirlwind of emotions.
Yeah, Bunny Room. There's a T-shirt that you made based upon one of the tracks on this album. My favorite, Bunny Room. Very dark.
The whole record is that whole record. I'm writing the majority of it with my kid on life support. So he's like been born, he's in the NICU, he's flatlined and died, he's been brought back, he's in a, like essentially a medically induced coma. He's not in a coma, but he's so high on whatever they're pumping into him that we're not seeing signs of life. And they're telling us that, you know, there's no promises. And I always felt that like doctors, due to my limited experience, lied to you and told you the best possible outcome. And because they weren't doing that, I was like, oh, there's no way he's gonna make it. So I just went in, and because we had, were on a tour essentially when she went into labor early and had to go to or when she hemorrhaged and had to go to the ER, I had like my laptop and like a I went and grabbed a recording interface. I had a guitar with me, and I just started pouring all of these things down into that. So recreating that record from those demos, those demos were recently released as A Plan to Suffer. It felt like those really had to be out there. But when we recreated that album, it was like getting sucked right back into seeing my son, you know, gasp for air, his first moments on Earth, which is like, you know, as a reformed drug addict, I had not prepared myself for that sort of feel, like that sort of emotion. I was devoid of so much of that for so many years. It was quite a wake-up call.
I wasn't ready for that answer. I'm just reading off my notes. Wow.
No, I mean, yeah. So it's also a t-shirt.
I'm loving your t-shirts, your gear, your merch.
Shout out my partner, Nicole. Huge part of that. Like, she and I just sit and brainstorm some great ideas, some ridiculously dumb ideas, and we try to make as much of it exist as possible. But that's been a huge part for us. I mean, we all, Conrad, Nicole, and I especially are really into Jordans and I hate saying streetwear, but just clothing brands that are for, like, degenerate idiots like us. And I think that just kind of being like a clothing brand, you know, as an independent band, you have to try to fight to make as much money as possible. And that's one of the ways, you know, you got to get your stuff out there.
Well, you're selling these tapes and these limited EPs, these demos are just a body. I want this. I want every version of this. This is absolutely wonderful. Just a body. The Pearl, you know, Begin to Fade. This was a very limited release on cassette.
Yeah, we did 100 of those. Those are cool. Like, we have a dedicated fan base that when we do like 100 tapes, they're gone in like an hour.
I'll say you do. Your fans are very dedicated. They buy everything.
And I want to make it fun for them because, so I mostly listen, I listen to like Tom Petty and the Replacements.
You covered Tom Petty.
Yeah, yeah. When he passed away.
I thought you'd cover from Damn the Torpedoes, but you covered for Insider from Tom Petty's 1981 album.
You know what's funny is I'm so bad at guitar that I started playing like 10 different songs, and that was the first one I could actually play.
Really?
Yeah, and I went, oh, okay, cool. But what I'm saying is I also listen to a lot of hip hop, and what's really cool about hip hop and being a fan of hip hop is like the amount of material that's released and the interactive experience of like social media, the merchandise that they drop. Like, as a fan, it's fun to be a fan. And I think that like being a fan of rock for a long time kind of got stagnant. Like, you wait 3 years for the new record. And I want that music. I know that the live thing is like going to always be a big part of this band and most bands. So for me, it's like releasing, having a lot of output is important because I just want people to be like, oh, this is where they're at now.
It's a lot like Cold Cave. Just keep releasing single after single after single.
And, you know, he's locked into a formula that's working for him. And I think like as fans, when you watch bands doing stuff, like especially bands like Cold Cave and us who are fiercely independent for the most part up until now, besides a couple exceptions, it's like there's a rhyme and a reason to why we do this. You know, like there's not a ton of money out there for the struggling musician, but there is money. And the way to get it is to, you know, carve a specific path. We've tried to do that because we want to keep doing it. And if we're not able to pay our bills and we're not able to be comfortable, like, it's not going to happen. So we're super we're super stoked on the amount of support we get from people buying all of the stuff that we make. Some of it, I'm like, there's no way they're going to buy a Softkill umbrella or a blanket. And then somebody buys like two umbrellas. And I'm like, whoa, that must rain a lot where they're from.
That's right. You're playing with Cold Cave and a couple other bands. A couple other bands that some people might have heard of at a big festival coming up.
Yeah, that's crazy. To have been like, that's another cool thing too. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just like an idiot fan. So to be chosen, even if it's by like you know, it's by Golden Voice, and like there's people with opinions about all of this stuff, you know, till the cows come home, they're like, oh, you don't do this and we don't like this and that's that and that's not punk. For me to be chosen on a festival that's like 99.9% the people who laid the foundation, and then there's like four or five of us new bands, that felt validating. It was cool, you know, because I love Psychedelic Furs, I love Devo, I love Echo and the Bunnymen. We're playing with Morrissey, regardless of political affiliations that people want to talk about. It's still like, oh, okay, you know, it's like, how do you get bigger than that? It's like missing New Order and The Cure, and it would be complete, right? And Chameleons too, I guess.
Mark Holman, Gary Newman, Bauhaus.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah, it's when we saw the flyer too, they didn't let us see it before it was announced. We confirmed. We accepted an offer. We were told Bauhaus was playing. We went, that's awesome. Would love to play with Bauhaus. And then the flyer dropped and we were like, what? Yeah. And then I got hit up by like 100 people saying, is this like an April Fool's thing? This is a joke, right? This is like Firefest part two. Like, I shouldn't buy tickets, right? And I was like, yeah, we're all got together to like con a bunch of you people. Like, are you serious? You know what I mean? This is the punchline to Softkill.
There's only a handful of newer bands that are on this bill. Black Marble, Dread mm-hmm. Majesty, Softkill.
Yeah, which it's like, okay, cool. Those Black Marble and Drab are like probably the two bands doing it the biggest. So I was like, if we're tailing that, then that's a good sign, right? We'll see.
It's really great. You're representing Portland.
Yeah, which we love to do. I'm not from here, but this is home. It's always going to be this band's home.
R.I.P. City.
Yeah. So, R.I.P. That's been a play on clearly Rip City, but lost a lot of people in this city. Did a lot of stuff that gets kind of overlooked day to day. A lot of addiction and suffering out here.
You've written 40 songs, and this is an album about Portland.
Wrote an album about Portland. We picked the 10 that felt the most concise together. It's, to me, the most varied and cohesive Softkill record since An Open Door. Like, it flows in a way that I feel like it's like almost the soundtrack to something, which it is. It's telling a story. Do we try some new stuff? But I think bands always feel very excited about the next step, and they're like, here's our next record. This is the best thing. I, without a doubt, feel stunned by how good this record is for us, for what we're capable of. I'm so excited to share it with the world.
Well, I'm even more excited, I think. You really scored a huge hit a couple years back with Wool. And yeah. This gets retweeted over and over again 3 years after you've released it. Tons of streams on this thing. Did you see this coming?
No.
This is the first track on Choke from 2016.
It's another funny thing,
album.
Too, that song. So I wrote that song with kind of a different drum pattern to it. And I had this arrangement at the time with a good friend of mine, Tim Lang from New Hampshire. I was living in New Hampshire at the time. He would come over and record and help me record these songs that I had written. And we put that together in that manner. We were like, okay, four to the floor, a little dance beat, whatever. This is the way to do it. Let's arpeggiate the bass line. Boom. So we put this together and without vocals. And I'm like, I got to find somebody to sing on this song for this new band I'm going to do, which shows you how detached I am from Softkill at that time. And it sat on the shelf for probably like a year and a half, 2 years. I finally wrote a vocal for it and said, God, this is a good song. Like, this could be something. And we ended up putting it on. It felt like it was could only be the opening track from Choke. But even the label was like, I don't think this is the single. And we were like, oh, okay. We didn't know anything.
Well, they're a very hardcore label. This is Profound Lore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, it's more of a death metal crazy label. But he didn't see it as a single. And I don't know enough about that stuff to, like, argue it. So I went, oh, for sure. And I'm blown away. It's, like, almost at 2.5 million streams, which is kind of hilarious. Us, you know. I mean, I feel... I feel like five steps from the gutter still
that
to this day.
That song specifically seems to grab a lot of attention.
Yeah, and it's about...
A lot of people resonate with that song.
It's about that, like... that song lyrically for me is about being on that edge. That song's about being locked up. But it's about being on the edge of, like, just feeling like you're going against the grain of everything else in the world. Feeling very alone in it. Feeling, like, equally destructive of everything around you, but mostly yourself. And I feel like probably a lot of people relate to that. I mean, it's not a unique mindset. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of us are pretty in that rut. I don't feel so much in that rut anymore, but I don't resent that song, and I still love playing it, which I'm sure, like, some bands don't want to play the song people want to hear. I'm excited to still.
Well, I can't imagine you, you know, twiddling your thumbs in the corner thinking, oh, what's going to be my next hit single? You're just not that kind of a writer.
No, I'm not. But I will say on the next record, to me, the next hit is Cry Me or Maddie Rue. Or this song Inverness. Those three to me feel like, for if you like Whirl or you just like that subject matter and danceability, like those are those songs.
Danceability. That's definitely that song.
It's crazy to see the response that when the arpeggiator of that song starts, like from Russia to like Mexico to back home in Portland, it's always exciting once a second or two of that go in.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Your 2016 world tour. This was your first, you know, major tour, right? Was it U.S. only?
Yeah, 2016, we toured the U.S. finally.
Was that bad news for you as someone who partakes in substances? Or?
You know what was funny was I was not sober on that tour, but I had just quit crystal meth for that was my, like, oh, I'm giving it up. I'm just going to smoke weed and drink and randomly partake in anything else that's offered to me. No, it wasn't. You know, it was like I booked that tour in like a month and we went out. And what we got to see was that a ton of people have been waiting to see us for a long time. You know, we were sleeping under people's coffee tables and in the rut. And I don't think we thought that would translate to anything else. Choke came out the gate with a lot of momentum when it finally dropped, and I feel like we haven't stopped since. So, like, we finally, in 2017, made it to Europe for the first time. I had never even left the United States, really. That's what addiction took from me, was, like, any sort of identity outside of being an addict, you know? And I've been to Europe four times since. We go there. It's amazing. People there are really supportive. It's exciting to do that with your music. But the internet's just, like, such a good assist in that. People can hear this podcast. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
It doesn't matter where you are. It's pretty cool.
I would like to talk about your collaboration with Adam Klopp of Choir Boy, the Saints single.
That was actually for a different project that I was doing, and there was like maybe a weekend where we had talked about a collaborative record. There's another song from that session that probably will never see the light of day. I don't know. It's kind of like halfway finished, but... We played with...
He's got a beautiful voice.
He does. He's got a... Everyone wants to...
Choir Boy.
Kiss his voice. Their new record is great. They're great. They're like one of our true artist friends that we met. There's not a lot of people that we feel close to. I love them. I'm blown away by them. I think they occupy a space that's really unique in their own. That song was another one. It had existed and sat on a shelf for a long time, and Adam had suggested dropping it as a Soft Kill single. We did it. Had a great response. He actually guests on a song on the new album. He's in there for a second and adds a nice melody to something that is beautiful. I feel blessed to have met a lot of the people that I've met, but Choir Boys definitely, that whole camp and their other bands, Gamma World, Sculpture Club, Human Leather, like all those bands, I'm like, okay, I love these bands.
The band is Conrad, yourself, and...
Yeah, right now it's been, for the longest, it's been Owen, who's been with the band off and on since Circle of Trees. Or not off and on, he's been with it the whole time. He was in Vampire for a minute, so I think he took like...
Oh, Vampire, yes.
Yeah.
Remember them?
Rest in peace. And then Conrad's been playing guitar since Heresy. Our friend that we made on one tour, Danny Valadez, he's one of those, like, got like nine different punk last names, but I think it's just come Danny Belladiz. He's been playing drums with us for a while, and he is the foundation of the band. Like, his drumming has really leveled us up. We loved playing with Max for years, but we always needed somebody that was, like, very robotic and primitive and hard-hitting. And Danny's able to do that, even though he's capable of so much more. And we actually just welcomed in a new touring member with us. His name is Ryan. He was in a great band called Cat Party. And he's playing my guitar parts, and I'm just singing mostly. So going back and forth, I've got some pretty bad arthritis, so playing for 60 days straight can take a toll on me.
You did a split single.
Yeah.
With a very hardcore band, Portrayal of Guilt.
Yeah, shout out Portrayal of Guilt. Yeah, big things coming for them. They're like hands down the best band in that genre. They're just all over the place, and it's brutal, and it's primitive and messed up.
Brutal.
Yeah, but it's in a way that's like not corny or forced. Like, it feels organic, and if it feels depressing and painful, which is cool. A lot of bands, I'm like, oh, they're called Decrepit Dog Fetus, and then it's like Milhouse with long hair and like a long sleeve Morbid Angel shirt making it. And this is like actual psychopathic skateboarders, street weirdos that I love. But that was like a precursor to the LP. So Tinfoil Drip on our side is produced by Dave Trumfio, who produced the next record. It kind of hints at what the record is going to be like, but it's its own thing.
And what's his background, Dave's background?
Dave was in a band called the Pulsars. They toured with Weezer back in the Pinkerton days. Did a bunch of other stuff too, but he's Chicago, kind of royalty. Produced a bunch of the early Wilco records.
How did you connect with him?
We met him on a tour, and he was like, hey, come check out my studio. And I was like, yeah, okay. And for some reason, wrote it off. I don't know why. Like, he's a great guy. We got along with him, and I was just like, man, I'm steering the ship. I know what we're doing. And he turned out, like, had we, you know, even made Savior with him, it would have been a totally different record. But what he did on Dead Kids R.I.P. City is, I'm blown away. It sounds like a total pop record, even with it still being Soft Kill. Just all the drums, the production, everything is so clear and hits so hard.
You sold me on this record.
Yeah, I mean, Tinfoil Drip, like I said, if you listen to that single, that's a hint at what he's capable of, but it just scratches the surface. He's somebody that we're looking forward to working with in the future as well.
Toby, it's great to connect with you. Really. Thanks so much for doing this. This is long overdue. I've been wanting to do it ever since I started 3 years ago.
Thank you so much. I mean, RIP City is home, so we've got to let the world know what's going on here.
Today's show was produced and edited by Gregory Druka Dang. That's me. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back with a bonus show next week. See you then.